important announcements, number which are absolutely connected to each other. Number one is we are ready for our, I hope, a siyum. We are going to try to go through and finish the last three psukim in Parshas Bereishis. As I have mentioned previously, this is not just, aside from all the reasons that we all feel connection to Parshas Bereishis, in my case, it was my Bar Mitzvah Parsha. So, and I think I may have told you that I was not the, and I am not the most natural Bal Koreh. So when we finish these psukim there, if you see a sense of exhilaration on my face, it's probably because I'm being transported 21 years to that feeling I felt when I finally finished my Kriyas HaTorah. So, exactly. So that's number one. The related point, as I mentioned last week, is that we are going to take a break, yet to be determined, but very likely through the end of January, until we start Parshas Noach. But Imer Toshem, we will this season, this year, be starting Parshas Noach. Obviously, we won't finish it before a summer break, but we will hopefully get well into Parshas Noach. But there will be a little bit of a break to give me some time to kind of refresh my batteries, to focus on some other shul-related things which I need to do. And certainly in the interim, feel free to get a head start, and feel free, it's certainly a good opportunity for someone who you think might benefit and enjoy this year, certainly as good a time as ever to come in when we will be starting a new Parsha. Okay, now we are ready. So let's review the psukim that are here. We're racing up to the maftir, and that is Pasuk Hey. So we have seen the transition taking place the last 2 weeks, as we did the first four psukim of the perek, where we saw that things were going bad, and the people multiplied, and we saw different classes, both spiritually, physically, giants versus non-giants. We saw these the Bnei Sheis, the genealogy of Sheis, but somehow they got dragged down by intermingling with the family of Cain. And we saw that bad things were happening, and Hashem was deciding, you know what, I'm usually forgiving, I'm patient, but there has to be a limit. And we saw the intriguing pasuk Dalad we ended with last time about these Nephilim, which again seemed to be once again a reference to these giants, perhaps not just giants, but angels that fell from the sky, that somehow cohabitated and took on a human form and became corrupted. So once an angel is already on this earth, then I guess apparently, again, this is a little esoteric for me, but can become corrupted, and in fact that's what happened, just could do things even worse than perhaps a human being could have done. So with all of that, we are now ready for really what is a seminal pasuk in the history of mankind, and that is Perek Vav Pasuk Hey. V'yar Hashem, and after all of that, Hashem finally takes a look out and says, or sees, I should say, Ki Rabba Ra'as Ha'adam Ba'aretz. The wickedness, the evil of man is terrible. V'chol Yetzer Machshavos Libo Rak Ra Kol Hayom. And all they want to do is be mischievous and cause trouble. And as a result of that very foreboding judgment or assessment, Pasuk Vav, therefore, Vayenachem Hashem ki asa es ha'adam ba'aretz. What does Vayenachem mean? Reconsidered. Right? Where'd you get that from? I have the same one. Marvin. So yes, it could be, but we'll see. That's not so simple. Vayenachem could be reconsidered. What else? What other word does anyone know? What does Vayenachem sound like? What other Hebrew words? Nechama, my sister's name, Nechama, which means comfort. That's not just different, that's very different, almost opposite. So we'll have to see how that plays out. But let's work with the art scroll. That Hashem, therefore, almost reconsiders the fact that he ever even created mankind. The Yis'atzev El Libo. And simply understood in a very kind of almost graphic language that Hashem was very much pain to the heart in our idiom. So this is very, very, if we just want to look at it even from a literary perspective, this very rich and vivid language here. These are painting with very broad strokes. Hashem is regretting, people are always bad, right? That's like, in human relationships,
marriage especially, but in general, you know, we often counsel people, especially when they get into fight, you know, don't use the always words, right? Because it's not true. You know, you never do that. You always do that. You're almost always exaggerating when you say that. Right? But yet Hashem, again, almost deliberately, I mean, not almost, apparently deliberately, speaking in such, you know, as I say, very vivid, almost extreme language. Yet Kol Yetzer Machshavos, all of their thoughts are rock, right? There's Kol and rock. Right? Those are two absolute words in the same pasuk that really, you know, emphasizing the very strong condemnation. The idea of Hashem, let's assume, for example, for now, that it means that he regretted it. The idea of Hashem regretting creating mankind. So leave aside the theological question of how could Hashem regret anything if he's perfect and he knows everything's happening. But leave that aside for a moment. But the bottom line is, if I were to tell you that you made a major life decision, let's do something we've done in the past and we'll do later in this year. Let's use what I think is a very simple analogy and an accurate one. Hashem to the world, us to children, if we have children. Could you imagine, right? All sorts of children give their parents all sorts of heartache. Right? That's, we all know. I did it too. However, could you imagine it being so bad? So, yes, you can imagine, you can see the level of exasperation. It's almost like crescendo, you know. You always do this. You never listen. You're always making trouble. I regret ever having you. Whoa, that's like a real red line. That's a real red line, which you would not imagine a parent ever crossing. But it builds up, and again, it's such broad and strong language. I mean, it's really, this is not like your average psukim here. Hashem is, but again, I think, before we even get into Mefarshim, I'm making this point not so much as a question, but because I think it's fitting. These are not stam psukim. These are major red light psukim. God is deciding to destroy the world. You know, we wouldn't have expected it to be understated. So I think we should be aware of the fact that even in the subtlety of the language, the choice of the language, you sense, even if you were somehow obtuse to the content, there's almost a rhythm or almost a poetry to the prose that is really kind of letting us know something big. Something big is happening. And then even just this last idea of Yis'atzev Alivo, again, it's very almost poetic language. God is pained to the heart. So again, leave aside the anthropomorphic element of it for a moment. Even if we were talking about a human being, Lahavdil, that's a strong way of describing someone being sad. You know, if you were really hurt by somebody, you might use that word. Someone just, you know, offended you, someone even insulted you, you know, you might not say that, but you broke my heart, you pained me to the heart. It's very strong language, and again, maybe I'm reading too much into it, but to me, it fits into this idea of that's when someone betrays you. And when a stranger does something bad to you, someone you didn't have expectations of, or trust, vulnerability, so it could be very, very bad. But to me, some of this language, especially this piece, Atzev Alibo, is, you know, you broke my heart. When do you say you broke my heart? That's someone who you already gave your heart to. You love somebody as a spouse, you love someone as children, could be even a good friend. When they let you down, when they, in this case, just rebel, I mean, so that breaks your heart.
Fits in with the use of Vayar Hashem, which is the Minas Rachamim, to show that they didn't even meet the standard of
good. It's a very good diuk. We're going to go back to that in a second. It's a very good diuk. We're going to get back to that. You are Mechavein to Chazal. Very good. Let's see Pasuk Zion now. Vayomer Hashem, and therefore Hashem says again, with all of that introduction, you know, that was all what Hashem's apprehended, what he saw, what he felt. And now Hashem pronounces. So let me ask you, who is he pronouncing it to? Who's he talking to? Oh, well, let's see. I think we had a Vayomer last week. We had three choices also, right? We'll see the same Achlokas again. Noah? Malachim or himself. Okay, very interesting. So what does he proclaim? Emcha es ha'adam asher barasi. I am going to destroy mankind. And again, I think it's absolutely not coincidental and not a minor point that the asher barasi is added. It is, in a certain sense, unnecessary. Who else are we talking about? Of course, that's mankind. But no, the tragedy of it, the poignancy of it is all the more powerful when you realize this is someone, Kaviyachol, destroying its own handiwork. Asher barasi, me'al pnei ha'adamam, wiping them out from the face of the earth. No one will be spared. Me'adam v'abehema, not just all the people, even the animals. Ad remes, could be crawly things, Adopa Shamayim, the birds, Ki Nichamti, Ki Asitim. What does that mean? So it sounds like, what's that word, right? That sounds like the pasuk before, Vayinachem. So if the first one means reconsidered or regret, so we'll assume that this one means regret. But we, as we said before, it's not so clear that's what it means. We'll have to get back to that. But again, let's assume that for a moment. I mean, this is heavy-duty psukim. It is very, very emotionally laden. And almost like an afterthought, almost anticlimactic, or kind of a bitter irony, you then have this dangling pasuk that concludes Parshas Bereishis, as if to say, like, we can't end on such a bad note. The Noach Matzah Chen Bein Hashem. Noach was a good guy. Now, again, what it's doing here, the fact that it's locked on to the end of Bereishis and isn't, where would you expect it? The beginning of Noach is striking in its own way. But, and in that sense, that's what it's a kind of a silver lining here. On the other hand, I would say, again, keeping in line with my original point as we've been reading the psukim, that these previous three psukim are big psukim, big adjectives, poetic. This is, pasuk is clearly very different. Even when we have the good news, quote unquote, or the silver lining, to me, maybe again, it could be that I'm making too much of it, but to me, this is a very simple pasuk. There's no big adjectives, there's no big language. It's just, Noach was a good guy. Matzah chen b'nei Hashem. And as we'll see, some of the tension that Chazal have about Noach's personality, which we're all aware of, usually from commentaries on Noach, is already in certain commentaries found at the end of Bereishis. So Noach can't catch a full break even at the end of Bereishis. Right, he deserved mercy. Right,
Noach,
not that he deserved it. Right. Yeah. We'll see. Yeah, Rashi, there's a Rashi that follows that as well. That Noah, or at least his children, perhaps may have been, saved more out of some level of mercy. So the point is, but that fits. It's a good point, Alan. That fits into my inference, my diuk, that even this good pasuk, if you had to ask Hashem, is Hashem, are there two complete conflicting realities that are being described here? And the answer is essentially no. It's not like there's an equivalency between this pasuk and the previous three. There's a tremendous imbalance, not just because it's three versus one. Even one-on-one, I don't think this pasuk kind of equals out any of the sweeping language of the previous pasuk. As if to say, no, yes, there is this Noach guy, and he's okay, but it pales in comparison to the bad. Yeah.
Rabbi, from a Peshat perspective, that's probably the highest madrega. I mean, you could say that someone in today's world and days of Noah, Motzachei Be'enei Hashem. I mean, that's a 5-star endorsement.
I don't know. Not at all.
It's relative.
Do you say somebody Motzachei Be'enei Hashem?
It's relative.
Wow. What's beyond that?
That's the.
Well, first of all, I'll ask you, Harry. When the next parsha, when we read that he's a tzaddik in the Tumim. I mean, who's to say? You could cut all these adjectives. I'm saying in a vacuum, I don't know which one means more. It sounds like a compliment. I'm not disagreeing with you. You're right. Right. So again, chayin, on the contrary, chayin can mean different things. And again, it begs the question, why here doesn't it say the tzaddik? I mean, that's why Unkelus translates it the way he does. That chayin almost like, I feel bad for you kind of thing. But anyway, let's hold off on that. Okay, we have, again, a lot to do. There's such a rich psukim, you can only imagine that there's tremendous commentaries on this. So first of all, let's go back to the maftir. Again, pasuk hey. First thing we're told, the absolute first thing we're told is ki rabba ra'as adam, right? Bad news. What is rabba ra'as? After all, didn't we see previously things were already bad? So take a look at a little. This is almost a pshat medrash, which is itself almost inconsistent statement to make. But in a very kind of little subtle way, says the medrash on the first source on your sheet, rabba v'holeches. Why the term rabba? Because it's implying that this is snowballing. Things are getting worse. And remember last time, right? One pshat that we saw last week in the 120 years. Was that Hashem was saying, I'm starting the clock, you have 120 years to reconsider the decision. And this medrash, as we'll see in a second, is part of a approach, which is in essence saying, not only did it not get better, rabas ra, it was getting worse. Take a look at Rav Hirsch. Or even before we see Rav Hirsch, skip just for a second, you'll see that the Radak, we expect Pshat more from the Radak than the Medrash, but the Radak just elaborates on the same essential point as the Medrash. Kevan shehigia haketz shenasan lahem me'av esrim shana. The time had come, put up or shut up, Hashem had given them 120 years. What does Hashem see? Kilo hi tivu masem. Not only did they not get better, avol hiruosam, they got worse. V'chol hayom hayakasha mechaveru. As if each day was getting worse and worse. It was escalating. Rav Hirsch has an interesting, just a subtle point, but I thought it was nice. He suggests that ra'a, the word ra'a, is here in contrasting with either tamim or shalim. Tamim and shalim mean perfect or complete or whole. Ra'a, in that sense, therefore means broken, as if to say that there was a large break in the harmony of the world. Again, which is a way Rav Hirsch is basically trying to get at, you know, lots of bad things happen, so punish those people. Why punish the whole world? Why are we destroying the whole world? The answer is because, right, if you have a cancer, Rahman al-Fan, on the inside, so you're just treating the symptoms, you know, band-aids aren't going to work. There was a fun, you know, when you reach a certain point, you got to just eradicate. You know, there's an idiom which is a depressing one when it's relevant, but I always found it to be a very striking term where they describe certain actions that a person or a company sometimes is taking as they're just shuffling around deck chairs on the Titanic. You're sinking, and you're worrying about all sorts of surface things which have nothing to do, which I had no way going to save you. You're still sinking. So in essence, that's what Rav Hirsch is saying. We could have done all sorts of things on the surface, but it wouldn't have mattered. There was this large break in the world, and it was just it was unfixable in that sense. He then asks an interesting question. When we talk about the Ra'as Ha'adam, we could either mean one or two things. It could either mean the actions, what he calls the evil of men, or the unhappiness, the evil that befalls men. I think that's a very interesting question. Sometimes there's actions that are evil, and then there's also times where, perhaps because of that, there's a result. What are we describing? The actions of people, or the sum total, the result? You know, what was the result for society? And Rav Hirsch actually suggests, not that it's exclusive, but he says we're not just talking about the actions. We're saying that they created a reality. He says the latter, the second of the two pshatim, and therefore he concludes by saying, when Hashem looked down, mankind had already brought the greatest state of harm and evil into the world. The result was, so it wasn't just like in the moment of the action was evil, but then after the person stopped doing whatever avera it was, things were okay. Enough averas, enough serious, terrible averas, and in that case, the result was evil, even when people weren't actively perpetrating it. The present was bad beyond all measure, and as for the future, that's the continuation of the pasuk. Hashem saw, and Hashem sees no hope. Not something to stress, but just so you should know, this is a very important pasuk in a certain halachic sense. And that is from the Rambam in Hilchos Tshuva. Sometimes we speak about this in Shul, although because it's so global, we tend not to focus on it. And it is that the Rambam very famously says that just like a person is judged every Rosh Hashanah of Eros, so too is every country, so too is every city, country. And then the Rambam even says in every Rosh Hashanah, the whole world is judged. Sum total of mitzvos of Eros, however you understand that generally, which is not our topic today. Right, right. Right, right. So how do we know that? Who told us that? How do you know? The whole world is judged? I have anything to do with what they're doing in Sri Lanka? It matters to me what's happening in Russia? They'll get judged? You know, maybe you'll say, I have a responsibility for Baltimore. And maybe you'll say, America. Maybe. What, the whole world? Who said? So says the Rambam, this pasuk, our pasuk is the makor. Take a look at the Rambam. He says, "V'chein kol olam kulo, the whole world, em hayu avanoseihem merubin mizuchoseihem. If the averos are more than the mitzvos, miyad hein nishkas, and they are destroyed." Shneemar, yar Hashem ki rabba rasa adam. In other words, there was apparently a judgment on humanity. And again, what the Rambam is saying is this was not a one-time affair. We hope that the result was one time. We're constantly being judged, rejudged, and reevaluated. Okay. That's for the opening of our pasuk. Then the pasuk continues, really very fascinating, almost difficult language. Chol yetzer machshavos libo rak ra kol hayom. What does that mean? And what's the problem with that?
what in effect would it add? I mean,
you mean the okay, good. Think philosophically even for a moment.
Why much shame? I mean, usually you're punished for doing something.
Okay, well, that's a good thing. I didn't even think about that. What bothered me, and this is something which we'll probably pick up on at the end of Noah. Next year sounds optimistic. This, for the record, this is our 49th year. I was hoping to finish with Bridges of 50. It would have been perfect, but what could you do? At the end of Noah, when Noah comes out of the Teva, so there's a very similar pasuk in Perkhes. And there are a lot of mepharshim that deal with the philosophical issue more on that pasuk than this pasuk, so I decided to wait. I think it's Ches HaChafalof or something like that. But the bottom line is, one question is, well, what happened to Mechir Chafros? What do you mean that we're all bad? And just generally, it's a philosophical, famous philosophical question. Are human beings innately good and then can get corrupted one way or the other or tempted? Or are human beings innately bad and therefore we have to be more protective? I mean, this is in politics and philosophy and religion. There's a lot of Torah on this. There's a lot of Mada on this. This is a lot. It's a major philosophical question. And this pasuk seems to, you know, be in the breach, you know, making a statement. But again, there's another pasuk in Noah. So I just, in case that, I don't know if anyone, it seems like no one did notice that. But okay, if you did and you were bothered by it, we noticed it too, but we will not be discussing it. However, the big question, which I think both of the Rashbams were noting, is what is this phrase adding? We just said Rabas Ra Adam. So what is this phrase adding? We just heard how bad it was. Can it get any worse after what we just heard? Good. So that's, so you're saying similar to Ethan. Good. Take a look at the Sephorno. The Sephorno, again, with the word Machshava, fair enough. I would say, I don't know where he gets it from Machshava. But as a philosophical point, the Sephorno is very strong. Rabas Ra, he says, that was in the past. And as Hashem did an evaluation, bad news. Okay, so you'll say, but no, be the optimist, Hashem, the future could be better, says the Sephorno La'asir. Hashem, the second phrase, you want to know what it was adding, Mr. and Mrs. Rashbaum? It was talking about the future. And how does Hashem know the future? Not just we're not just asking that as a philosophical question. What sign is there now that Hashem could be so confident that they'll never do tshuva? Says the Sephorno, Shalo hayeshamim lamochiach. Ein l'kavo shashuv. Because they weren't listening over the generations. There were tzaddikim in every generation. Thank you. They weren't listening. They weren't accepting Moshe. And somebody, and this is the bottom line, somebody who is totally closed to constructive criticism will never improve. Right? All sorts of people make mistakes. Some people make terrible mistakes. But there are basically two types of people. Those who are willing to have it pointed out to them and learn from them, and those who don't. I once saw, I think Rabbi Fran quotes, a very beautiful idea that he said, the legendary former head of the Agudah, Rabbi Moshe Scherer, used to say. And that is that there is a juxtaposition between the parsha of Tochacha, of rebuke, and the parsha of Erchin, the idea that in the time of the Beis HaMikdash, you could make a donation to the Beis HaMikdash, and one of the ways you could determine your donation was you could say, I'm giving the, quote, value of myself, the value of my wife, the value of my child or children or my slave. And this is not about absolute value of a human being, that's unquantifiable, but for the sake of this tzedakah, the Torah gives specific amounts. And he quoted from Rosher, what's the possible connection between these two? So it's a homiletical, but a beautiful homiletical explanation is exactly this point. It says, you want to know the erech of a person? You want to know the true value of a person? How does he respond to Tochacha? How does he respond to Musar? You can learn a lot about a person. And that's exactly what the Sephorno says. It wasn't just that they were so bad, but there was no hope for the future because they wouldn't have listened and they wouldn't learn. Once you have that, so then we can understand why, again, and this is what's kind of in the back of my mind the whole time we're learning these psukim, which is, you know, why would Hashem go to such drastic lengths? Why couldn't he give him another chance? What happened that would make him finally say Ad Kan and with such wrath, with such unforgiving, you know, just destroying everything? And that's in essence what these psukim are trying to tell us, and that's one thing that the Sephorno teases out. As bad as a person is, it doesn't matter what the Avera is, if they're willing to learn and they're willing to take criticism or correction, then there's still hope. Once they close to that, all hope is gone.
So why was he so confident that by inducing the mabul that things would get better after that?
That's next. That's next part. I'm not saying it's a bad question, but that's not, he's not talking. We're not there yet.
But the bigger philosophical question is, how is it that the supreme being that creates the world has Harakam?
Well, we didn't get to Vayanachem yet, so we don't even know what that means. Hold on to that. We're getting there. Just want to point out another alternate shot about, again, this meta question, which I'm struggling with, and we're trying to figure out. What was so bad? Why did Hashem say, in essence, I give up? So one is the Sforno. Take a look at the Radak. Radak says something interesting. When it tells, when the Pasuk uses the term the Yetzer, so it says the Radak something very interesting. Mishne Yetzirim, Sheesh Belibo Shel Adam. When right, the Pasuk says that the Kol Yetzer Adam, all of the Yetzer of a person is bad. All is bad, says the Radak, means even the good one. Echad Tov, Echad Ra. Kulo Haya L'ra. I think that this could mean one of two things. I'm not sure you tell me what you think. One of two things. One thing it could mean is that in every person, even if they're 90-10 or 95-5, but everyone's got a Yetzer Tov, which is another way of saying everyone's got their good sides, their good midos, and everyone's got their bad midos. Some people have more, some people have less, but everyone's got both. Comes along the Radak and says, you see what Hashem was observing about this generation? These were people who had no redeeming qualities. Right? When I was in the smicha class, so one of the classes you take is public speaking, homiletics. So the first half of the year is just focused on Shabbos drushas. By the second half of the year, we also would branch out, speaking of wedding speeches, invocations, funeral hesbedim, and I still remember one of the crystal clear classes where Rabbi Lookstein was speaking about when you have like the meanest, most, you know, son of a gun, you know, and you got to give a hesped about them. You know, what do you do then? His parents, his children hate him, his wife hates him, his husband hates her, whatever the case is. What do you do then? And his basic answer was very simple. Everyone has a redeeming quality. You just got to get out the shovel and dig, dig, dig. Yeah, dig if you got to look for it. I'll just give you one quick example to show you how creative a rabbi has to be sometimes. This person was an obsessive perfectionist. To the point that his children, you know, 99 of the test, not good enough, you know, this kind of thing. So his children hated him. Everyone in shul hated him because he was very mocked, he didn't want to talk in davening. Wonderful. But anyone who whispered, he turned around and yelled at them. Right, so it was, so the hesped was all about this person's mida of striving for excellence. And there was like a little line in there about how sometimes he was so dedicated, it became hard for other people to match his intensity and his dedication to the striving of excellence. So you got to look, because everyone's got some good midah in there, right? That was the assumption. It's true. Apparently, says the Radak, but not now. You want to know why Hashem had to react so radically and extremely? Because the situation was extreme, and therefore called for extreme measures. They had no redeeming qualities. That's probably the pashup shot of this Radak.
And also, the Kol Hayom, he translates always. In other words, not only now, but Hashem saw
in the future.
Never,
right, well, yeah, which again gets back to that Sephora, right? That there's no hope for the future.
Never,
right. Right. Again, because as long as you have that glimmer of light, not to be too sappy about it, so then that can always grow. But once you hit rock bottom, if there's nothing there, then there's nothing to get better with. Another possibility, and again, these are not mutually exclusive, but another possibility I was thinking of, which would be very intriguing, which maybe the Radak means, is that even midos, which we objectively consider good, can be used inappropriately. My favorite example of this is always anava. Humility is like the classic good Jewish mida, but both in our real lives and, frankly, in Chazal or Tanakh, we have certainly a number of examples where it's clear from the Tanakh or Chazal will be critical of somebody who was modest when they shouldn't have been, or too modest, right? The famous Gemara is about the Churban, right? On the Sanusos from Zachariah Kulis, Chervas Bebes Mikdashenu, right? He was too humble. I'm not getting, that's the whole Bar Kamsa, that's the end of the postscript of the Bar Kamsa story. It's his Anava that destroyed the Beis HaMikdash. And we have this in other examples too, that's just the most famous one, where even good midos can be misapplied. So perhaps that's another thing that the Radak may or may not have in mind, which is, yes, even their good midos, they were misapplying. You know, they were so, couldn't get it out of their own way, so to speak, in terms of the wickedness factor. Either way, the combination of Radak and Sephorno filling in, you know, or complementing the actual pashup shot of the pasuk certainly paints a very, very ominous picture. Okay, so now we are ready for Vayinochem. And really, it's two things which are relevant in a certain sense. One is Vayenachem, the next pasuk vav, Hashem regretted, or so it seems, and V'yis'atzev Eligo. So we'll see that the Mefarshim, there's basically two schools of thought in terms of translation, and basically both schools of thought tie these two words together, even though you could understand V'yis'atzev totally independently. But the bottom line is, however you understand the beginning of the pasuk, the Vayenachem, that is going to lead to how you understand the second half of the pasuk. Think about it for a moment and you'll realize exactly why. Before we see Rashi, when we read the pasuk at the beginning of the shir, and I asked you, what does Vayenachem mean? So most of you said, Art Scroll says, changed his mind, regretted it. That's one pshat. But then I asked you, well, what might be another pshat, and what did you say? Comforted. Now let's assume that it means comforted for a moment. How do you read the continuation of the pasuk? Can you be at the one time Vayenachem comforted and V'yis'atzev al libo, pain to the heart? Those are mutually exclusive contradictory emotions. So if one understands the beginning of the pasuk as he regretted it, so you'll be able to understand the end of the pasuk. That's, you can imagine how much pain it is when someone regrets the decision, right? That's a very painful reality in life when you realize you've made a mistake. However, if you assume that the whole pasuk is completely different, it means Hashem was comforted. We don't know why he was comforted yet. We'll have to see. If you say Hashem was comforted, so you're not going to be able to explain the end of the pasuk simply as then he was so pained. Was he comforted or was he pained? Which one was it?
Unless he made a decision and he knew his decision, and so he was unsoothed.
But we saw that he was sad about the decision. So what brought him comfort? At least he made it. So we saw that last week. Which parish was it? I forget who. Rashi. When, I think it was Rashi, right? Last week when we said that there was, what was it? When the pasuk said, "V'yomer Hashem lo yadun ruchi v'adam." Is that it? Yeah, so what did Rashi say? Lo yis'arim v'yarev ruchi, right? My spirit is no longer bothered. Which we said, what Rashi seemed to be saying amazingly was, right, Hashem was all torn up about the decision, right? When we have a major life decision, when we're not sure what to do, that's tremendously tension-filled. Some people, even when they make the decision, are constantly second-guessing themselves and making themselves nuts. That's usually an unhealthy type of person. But most people, when they finally reach the point of making a decision, just the act of decision brings them comfort. That's a chazal. Ein simcha kataras hasfekos. Just resolving questions is already its own form of satisfaction. So you're saying that maybe that would be an interesting shot, but that maybe that's how we could mix and match the two parts of the pasuk. On the one hand, he was comforted because he made the decision. On the other hand, the decision was objectively very saddening. But at least there was that comfort of, now I know where to go, which we saw Rashi himself say earlier, last week. Very good. I like that. However, interesting enough, Rashi does not have that pshat in either of the two that he does mention here. So let's take a look at Rashi. Rashi says, we're in Pasuk Vav, first Dibur Hamaschil, first comment. V'yinochem Hashem ki asa. Hashem, what does that mean? Says the Rashi, his first explanation, Nechama Haisalafanav, not like our scroll. He was comforted. What was so comforting about destroying the world? So not what we just were suggested by Mrs. Rashbam, but rather an amazing medrash, Shabara B'tachtonim. He was comforted in the fact that he made mankind mortal. Why? She'ilu hayamin ha'ayonim hayam mamridan. Could you imagine if mankind was also angelic or supernatural? How much worse it would be? There was a limit to how much damage people could do because we're finite, we're limited. And we still did a bang-up job of ruining the world. Had we been malachim, we would have even corrupted the celestial spheres and the anger. It wouldn't have been enough for Hashem to destroy the world, we would have to destroy Shemayim too. It's a medrash. Rashi's quoting a medrash. It's not his own explanation. It's a medrash. So that's a very paradox. You know, I would call that the unbelievably seeing the glass half full approach. Hashem could look at the world seeing complete destruction, knowing I got to level it to start over. But, you know, like almost like Rav Levi Yitzchak Berdichev, you can still see something positive in this. Nachum Ish Gamzu, right? Oh, but at least I didn't get to destroy the angels. At least they're only so bad. There's only so much they could do. That's the first explanation of Rashi. Dovar Acher. Skip a line or two. Oh, excuse me. So let's go. I'm sorry. Continue. Now, in light of that, how are we going to read the next phrase, the continuation of the Pasuk? After all, he was comforted. So again, we have this Rashi shot, but unfortunately, Rashi didn't go with that. So how is Rashi going to explain? Vayis'atzev, ha'adam, the man, meaning mankind, will be pained. El libo shel makom. In other words, Hashem decided or thought, I'm going to bring, you know, they will feel the pain. All of a machshavto shel makom, it arose in the thought of Hashem, lahat atzivo, to make him sad, to make mankind sad. Just look at the pasuk inside again. How do you read it according to this explanation of Rashi? Vayenochem Hashem, ki asa es ha'adam ba'aretz. Oh, Baruch Hashem, I didn't make them in heaven. I made them in the world. There's only a limit. They can only ruin the world. They can't ruin the heavens too. And Hashem decided, therefore, I'm going to punish them. I'll bring them pain. I will punish them. That's the first explanation of Rashi, how he reads the pasuk. Everyone with me? Okay. Back to Rashi. Dovar Acher, second explanation. Vayenochem, meaning nehefcha machshavto shel makom. This is where Artskol got the translation from. He changed his mind. Hashem changed his mind. Now, what did he change? Says Rashi, midas rachamim lemidas adin. Until now, right, the corruption didn't start one day. He didn't decide the next day to kill everyone. He's been midas rachamim for generations, and at least the last 120 years. Now Hashem decided, Vayenochem, no more, I changed my mind, the train is switching tracks. And now I'm in Midas HaRachamim. Olav HaMachshav HaLafonov. So he had a question. Ma'alosos Ba'adam, Sh'asa Ba'aretz. What should I do with this creature, mankind? And that is the beginning of the pasuk. Now that he's switching to Midas HaDin, Rashi says, now he's reconsidering, what should he do? If you take a look now at the next Dibur HaMaskil, so if that's the case, then we could understand Vayis'atzev more clearly. In other words, sometimes a train switches tracks painlessly, seamlessly. You know, in life, you know, I thought I was going to do this. You know, I figured I'd be, my whole life, I thought I was going to be a doctor. Then I hit college and I can't get out of my way in freshman biology. I guess medicine's not going to be for me. All right, no big deal. Let's, you know, I'm pretty good at math. Let's go for accounting. Right? Some people could do that. They had a plan. They thought things were going to go one way for them. Okay. You know, if I could say it in this context. Hashem had other plans for me. Here we're talking about Hashem. Right? I'm going to have to switch tracks. No big deal. Very often, most people, especially if it's something that they were very heavily invested in, even, first of all, most people do not have the strength to switch tracks. Most people will stay where they are, even if it's coming down around them. Because to walk away from something like that is very difficult. But even people who, either by choice, or because they had no choice, but one way or the other, make the change. I don't know, bad marriage. Right? People stay in bad marriages all the time just because that it's too scary to get out of it. Right? But let's assume someone did. Switch a job, switch a life change, whatever it was. Because they had to, because someone made the decision for them, whatever. But something someone was very, very invested in, it's not just that you switch tracks. It's very painful. Even when you do it. I thought my life would be this way, now it's somewhere else. So, first thing is that you should be able to switch tracks. You don't want to be dysfunctional. But even if you're functional, that doesn't mean that there shouldn't be some sadness. That's understandable. Says Rashi, Hashem switched tracks. He went from Midas HaRachamim, the way he wanted to run the world, to Midas HaDin. Again, and here it's why it's relevant. We're stressing Maase Yadav from the pasuk. He feels so pain. He's so pained about this. It's a necessary decision, but it's a painful one for Hashem. He's switching tracks, but it is a very, very painful thing to do, to come to the realization that I have to use Midas HaRachamim
and I have to destroy the world. I don't want to read the rest of the Rashi, it's a long Rashi, but he quotes from the Medrash a story which talks about the question which Ethan had asked, I think it was Ethan or someone else before, which is, we're only doing short shrift to it, but just so you should know, it is in the commentaries here, which is again a meta-philosophical question, what would that mean? And we have many examples, especially in Chazal, which speak about Hashem changing his mind. Although the Machshavta, he thought to do this and did that. You'll recall 2 years ago when we first started this series, the Medrash Rabbah famously on the creation story talks about thousands of worlds being created. Hashem didn't work out, destroyed them, until he finally got to the world we inhabit, right? That's a relevant Medrash, among other reasons, regarding evolution and dating what's called biblical cosmology, how old is the world? So Mepharshim talk about that matters. But leave aside that for a moment. We ask the philosophical question. What does Hashem need a mulligan, as the saying goes? Hashem needs a do-over? Hashem needed 1,000 worlds to get it right? But that's in essence to what Chazal is describing. So here also, now 1,001. You finally almost had it. Didn't work. Right? What does that mean? So Vayinochem is a problem from that philosophical perspective. And the idea of Hashem being sad over it, I mean, kind of weird. So leave aside, we're not treating this as an independent topic, which it could certainly deserve. I'll give you what my theory was. It's the same theory I had 3 years ago. But just this Rashi just points out on a very human level that Chazal essentially say, listen, just because, this is in a certain sense what Ms. Rashi said before, says Rashi here, just because you knew a decision ahead of time was necessary doesn't mean that it's not painful. And all sorts of things are not unexpected, but they're still difficult. And in that sense, again, speaking in human terms, that's what it was describing for Hashem. Not that all of a sudden he got surprised. I was dramatizing it, obviously, intentionally. It was, I thought it would be this way. Unexpected surprise, I got to switch tracks. So here Rashi says, of course, you can't really say that literally about Hashem. And Hashem knows everything at all times. But the fact is, even if he knew, it wasn't that it caught him by surprise. I always thought I was going to be a doctor, and now I realize I don't know chemistry. It was, I always knew it was going to happen. It doesn't make it any less painful. Destroying my handiwork isn't any less painful. So why, just as a quick aside, why would the Torah go out of its way to describe it in these imprecise and almost confusing terms? So I think the answer, whenever you have a medrash, or in this case, or a pasuk, it's dramatizing the point in very human terms. It's very, very, from a Musar perspective, it's very, very instructive. If you want to get a sense, again, to whatever extent that means that Hashem is in pain, but we have that as a cardinal and recurring theme in our Machshava. I speak about that every year on Tisha B'Av. It's one of my, quote, favorite themes for Tisha B'Av to stress. I did it last year in particular, but Hashem is crying with us and in mourning with us. So you want to know how bad it was. So the answer is, it was this bad. Because, as I said before, bad things happen are bad. But when you expected or had planned for something good, and then a bad thing happens, on a human level, that's always worse. There's a famous Beis Halevi that, commenting on Al HaNisim, that makes that point in broader Machshava context. But it's just basic human psychology. And I remember the first time I heard that Beis Halevi, I think the Rav gave the example, you know, there's nothing worse than when you were expecting the birth of a child and out comes something else. Right? You could say, but the same child could have the same sickness or, God forbid, death, a different stage of life. But when you were expecting the good and instead of the good you got the bad, that contrast is the hardest. And I think that that is, in essence, anthropomorphically, what the Torah is, or Chazal are trying to stress, and really the Torah, what the choice of words are. You want to get a real sense of how bad was this for Hashem, you know? After all, you can always start over, and you can always say do-over, you know? And we all know that the world ends up going on okay. But you have to say, in the moment, it was that bad. You want to try to have a human hasaga, a sense of how bad it was? That's the bad it was. It's my suggestion. Okay. We still have 10 more minutes or so, and we still have more to do. I'm not going to read just because we spent too much time on this, but if you want to take a look, the Gemara in Sanhedrin, in essence, brings down the two answers. In essence, brings down the two explanations of Rashi. Has two different theories as to what is going on in this pasuk. What is good about it? That Yafa Asisi Shetikanti Lehem Kvaros Ba'aretz. You know, it's good that I made them graves, and I prepared their deaths. Meaning, as Rashi says, it's good that you're destroying the Rishayim. You know, you made a decision. That's the right decision to make. They deserve it. However, the other one says, Lo Yafa Sisi. I'm unhappy about it. It's a painful decision for me.
that I had to, in essence, kill them. And as Rashi says, Efshar Hayu Choser. In other words, that tinge of, you closed off the possibility for tshuva. So is it that Hashem is consoled? He realizes he made the right decision? That's one explanation in Rashi, one opinion in the Gemara. Or is it, no, there's a painful, you know, he had to make the decision, but it's a painful one, lingering doubt, you know, maybe could I have given them even one more chance, that pain. So that's also, those two explanations are both in the Gemara. And furthermore, I quoted here the Ibn Ezra, and the truth is that the Ramban on the next page has something similar, and all the Mefarshim really point out, just something that we've been taking for granted, but I figured I'd put it on the sheet for you to see inside, and that is the fact that obviously all of these terms are not meant to be taken literal. This is what we call in English anthropomorphism, or using human descriptive terms for the Rebbe Shalom, as the Ibn Ezra says, Dibra Torah v'Lashon Bnei Adam, right? It's using human terms so that we can have some semblance of understanding. After all, again, this is so human, so poignant. Hamash chismash asa yira shenicha. Because if you destroy something that you made, it sort of looks like you changed your mind. Right? And that on a human level would be absolutely true. Why else would you do it? You know, you'd regret having made it, that's why you would destroy it. And in essence, even though the term regret in a literal sense can't be applied to Hashem, but that's how it was, that's how it appeared to humanity. That's the Ibn Ezra. If you take a look on the top of the next sheet, you see that the Ramban also, again, just makes the point, Bar Torah Kalashon Bani Adam, that Hashem was speaking, so to speak, in that anthropomorphic phrase, that's the terms of our Torah. Okay. If you take a look at the bottom of the page, the Seforno, turn back for a second, I'm sorry, another possible understanding of Yis'atzev, Kilo Yachpots Mos Mavis Hames. In other words, and this again, a number of Farshim say the same thing, and this is again a primary point of Hashkafa for us, Hashem did not want to do this. Hashem does not want to punish the sinner, does not want to kill the one. What would he prefer you do? Shuva. And that's the famous Gemara, right? Who was it with Rabbi Meir and Bruria, right? Right, where he says, I'm praying for them to die, Yitamu Chotim, right? Let them be destroyed. And Bruria says, no. Chotim, right? Chotim is the sins. We want that to be destroyed. I want the tshuva. We don't want the sinners, you know? Love the sinner, hate the sin. So that's what the Sforno says here. That's what Hashem was, in essence, saying. He had to do it, but he regretted that he had to do it. He would have much preferred that they had done teshuva. Okay, a few minor points, and I think we'll round out our study of Parshas Bereishis. So we mentioned before, the pasuk says Vayomer, but it also then ends with El Libo. So who is Hashem talking to, and how do you put that all together? So one possibility, really there's a machlokas, as I said, I don't know of Mepharshim who said that he was talking to the angels, but just like we saw last week when there was a similar Vayomer, there are two possibilities. Each one, again, if we play it out, is very fascinating. One possibility says the Ramban, top of the page, at the second line. Why does the pasuk, if it said Vayomer, so you don't, you know, Hashem is not psychotic, Hashem doesn't talk to himself. Right? Dissociative, right? Hashem is not imagining things. He doesn't have an imaginary friend. What do you mean Hashem is talking if it says El Libo to himself? So the Ramban says at the end of the first line, what does that mean, El Libo? Ki lo higidzeh l'navi sheluach aleihem. Vayomer doesn't mean that he spoke to anyone. It means that he thought. And it means to the exclusion of having sent someone. Take a look at the Ibn Ezra below. The Ibn Ezra has two opinions. Oh, excuse me, I forgot. I was wrong. There were all three of the theories we said were correct. Oh, Amira Lamalachim. Right, I'm sorry, my mistake. The Ibn Ezra, I was thinking of the Ramban. The Ibn Ezra says the third possibility, yes, talking to Malachim, but certainly not talking to any human. Stop for a moment. The Rambam in Mor Nevuchim also assumes that way. And if you put all of these together, what you have is something very interesting, which we'll have to keep in mind when we get to Noah. And that is that you may be familiar, and you may recall from previous learning or rabbis' drushas, that there are all sorts of different times, at least in Rashi, for example, or other places in which, in Parshas Noah, there's an assumption that there was some kind of a system in place whereby Noah was going to be giving Musar or telling people, you know, listen, hey guys, if you don't shape up, we're all going to have to ship out because the flood is coming. So I saw some Svarim point out this Ramban in Ibn Ezra, and perhaps the Rambam as well, all rejects that. Now, you know, what did Noach think he was doing? I don't know. But they make it clear, it's a Farish here, that he did not, there was no, you know, like we have in the rest of Nach, where the Navi gets the word, you know what, you know, think of Yonah, right? Spread the word, if they don't shape up, you know, I'm going to destroy the world. And then the Navi's job is to tell the people. Says the Ramban, says Ibn Ezra according to one opinion, but that did not happen here. They ask, why not? Why didn't they get another chance? So that we can answer easily. That's what we just learned. That's what we learned last week. They had gotten hundreds of years of chances. And they were so... Another chance is if there's some redeeming qualities. Another chance is that they still have a Yetzer Tov. Another chance is if they're willing to listen to a Mochiach, as we saw from the Sephorno. Hashem knew there was nothing to talk about anymore. Reminiscent of, Avram and Sodom. There was nothing to talk about anymore. They were beyond that. So that would explain why he didn't send the Navi Noach to give the warning. Again, just we'll keep this, try to, hopefully somebody here will remember this when we get to those sources in Noach and see if we can put some of these things all together. However, it should be noted, not only because of the commentaries that we know from Noach, but even here on our pasuk, the Ibn Ezra says no. Ibn Ezra says, I have a second opinion. Yesh Omrim, Lin Noach. Right? That's not what Ibn Ezra really prefers, but he says, Yesh Omrim, Lin Noach. He spoke to Noach. In other words, Vayomer, he was telling Noach, guess what? Now again, does that mean that they had still had a chance to do tshuva or not? I don't know. But at least Noach knew what was coming. He was being told in advance what was happening.
That's in the next part anyway.
I just mentioned. Yeah. No, but what did Noach know and when did he know it? To paraphrase the famous, right? We're not at Watergate, but... What did you know and when did you know it? So the Ramban and the Ibn Ezra would give different answers to that question in terms of what Noach knew and when he knew it. It's just interesting in terms of both the culpability of Noach vis-a-vis the rest of the world, as well as, you know, Hashem's quote-unquote thought process. Obviously, it reflects a certain attitude if he waited until the last minute to tell him.
Presumably, Hashem already told him that the decision was made.
Not presumably. Not according to
Noach. I mean, clearly. It's
not clearly.
He says, in the name of Hashem.
When was that being said? In other words, we're not up to Noach yet. We have to wait till next time we get together, Harry. But when did that pasuk happen? That's my point. Yeah, when did he tell Noach? I'm not saying he never told Noach, but maybe he told him at the last minute.
Oh, okay.
That's what I'm saying. Did he tell him all the way in advance, where there was time to do something about it? And of course, somebody's mafarshim, the answer is no. Okay, two more points and then we're done. One more one on the bad, and then we'll take one final comment on... We'll talk about the good of Noach, but we'll make sure to water that down because that's Jewish tradition for Noach. Okay, a point that Eli had anticipated earlier in the shir, and that is the fact that in all of these very ominous psukim, it's striking that the name of Hashem that is used, Yudkevokay, that is the one that is typically associated with Hashem's midas harachamim, his mercy, right, as opposed to Elohim, which is midas hadin. So how do you make sense of that? So there is a medrash that says that's exactly the point. Again, striking the same chord we've seen repeatedly in the shir from Sukkim and from commentaries, just letting you know how bad it was. Says the medrash, Amr Shmuel bar Nachmeni, Oy lehem, oy 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 oy. That's as translated as read. Oy oy oy. The Rishoyim, for these wicked people, Shem Hofkim Midas Rachamim, Midas Hadin. In other words, again, it's a way through the subtleties of language, of dramatizing how angry they must have made Hashem, therefore, i.e., ergo, how bad they were. That even Hashem's midas harachamim, so to speak, got transformed. Right? Reminiscent of what we saw earlier, that their good yeser tov somehow became like a yeser hara, so too even Hashem's rachamim got turned around and became a midas hadin. As he gives examples where other times we see that Hashem is always used for mercy, here it's in an ominous pasuk. Now I thought an interesting twist on this idea, which again, I've been striking this, beating this drum since we got to this perek, and that is using, and this whole decision, this whole story of Hashem thinking about him as a parent, and that adds to the story. So I was reminded of that again when we said Rav Hirsch. He doesn't quote the Medrash, but in essence, I'm sure he knew it, and he's anticipating or working off the Medrash. He says, and to use the, his punchline, that the degeneracy was so great that extermination itself was an act of mercy. In other words, sometimes there's what they call, you'll forgive the using of the phrase, a mercy killing. Or sometimes we punish, right? Sometimes we punish because that's the greatest act of love we know that they need, right? We have other times like this where we speak about, right, in terms of the general topic of capital punishment in Jewish law. So many mefarshim, many makaros, not that these are mutually exclusive reasons, but there's the obvious reason you would think that we punish the person that's punitive. And maybe there's another reason, which is that we want it to be preventative, right? Other people will learn the lesson. There's also a third possibility, which is that it's redemptive. In other words, that's the tshuva that the person needs. The Rambam speaks about that, how certain averos can only be forgiven if they carry with them a death sentence. So in a sense, that, says Rav Hirsch, is what was going on here. It was Hashem's rachamim. At this point, if I let you live, what does that mean? It's like the Ben Sarah murder. It just means you're going to have more averos, more time to do sins, not going to get any better. At least if I kill you now, that could itself, in a certain sense, be a tshuva. That itself at least limits the destruction that you would do. Now, whether that's really a tshuva or not, first of all, Rav Hirsch didn't say it, although he kind of hints at it, but it would be worth noting, if that's what Rav Hirsch has in mind, that's against the Gemara that we saw last week, which made the point that the Dor HaMabul has no chance, even in Olam Haba, they're gone, that they were that bad. So maybe you don't want to go so far as to say that if I'll do this, you'll be forgiven, but again, at least it limits the damage. And in a sense, again, it dramatizes just how bad it was. In that sense, it's Dafka, the mercy name of Hashem, that had to do the destruction. And finally, to conclude, the Sephorno makes sure that we don't have to wait until next Parsha to see the famous Rashi about whether Noah really was a good guy, or really was not as good a guy, super duper, not so super duper. The Sephorno lets us know that we can expect already here at the end of Rashi's. And he makes the point, which was, again, I think alluded to by Alan before, which is that the chain here was almost like Hashem doing a favor, more than almost it being deserved. And then he makes the point that Noah, and certainly his children, they weren't like Avraham, they weren't like Moshe, they weren't like Shmuel. And then he says something interesting. Tell me what you think this means, at the end of the first line. Noah, afal pishol chiyach al hamasim hamakal kalim inyan hamadinus. He did give them mussar about some things, but what he didn't do was lohora osam ladas akel alecha b'drachav. But he didn't call on them; he didn't teach them to follow in Hashem's ways. And therefore, even though he himself was a tzaddik v'stamim v'inyan ubemaisa in his thoughts and his deeds, amnam hatzaddik hamashdim atzma b'vad, hooray! Right? If he only perfects himself, only he's going to be saved in essence. Only he's going to reap the benefits. Someone who also is perfecting other people, so obviously the reward gets multiplied throughout the people that are benefited. So the basic thrust of this Sephorno is the standard, not on Noah, right? Not just that he was only relatively good, which is true, but also classical point of Noah, he didn't, unlike Avram, he didn't try to save everybody else. But it is interesting, this to me is, I don't know if other Mepharshim talk in these terms, he does have a little bit of a duality to this Sephorno. He did do something. So how do you understand what he says he did do? Hochiach al hama'asim hamakal kalim inyan hamadinos.
He taught him the Sheva Mitzvahs for they know by nothing more.
Yes, it does.
Yeah, but I'm saying as opposed to what Avraham.
So don't use the halakha category. Just tell me what does he mean in beyond that halakha category.
He taught them, I guess, more natural law, as a societal law, as opposed to
live civilly.
Civilly.
Right. So I think it means it definitely means something like that. I would say maybe one of two possibilities: either that we're talking about different, so to speak, values. You know, he wasn't talking about davening or, I don't know, something like that, but he meant the things that mess up a society, like murder, you know, okay, don't do that. But he didn't say anything about a slightly different thing that he might mean, is that even those things which he spoke about, you can speak about that from the perspective of there's an omnipresent lawgiver, be close with Hashem, strive to do his will, and therefore you shouldn't murder, for example. It's immoral, it's not what Hashem wants. Don't commit all sorts of sexual immorality, because lechaz bedrachav, do what Hashem wants. And then there's just, no, tikkun amadinus, don't murder, because listen, if we murder, how's anyone going to go? You know, you can't exactly have a functioning society, right? The old social contract. You can't have a functioning society if people don't play by certain rules. So even if he was giving tochacha on the same avera, what was the focus? Was the focus on following Hashem's will, getting close to Hashem? Or was the focus on what he calls inyan hamadinus? Just the civil or social benefits, right? We often talk about that. There's also the social benefits to the lifestyle of Torah mitzvos. Maybe there is. Is that why we do it? Is that the be-all? Is that the sum? Is that the highest aspiration? You know, keep Shabbos because it's nice for the family that we have one day a week we get to sit down together. If that's all it is, then, you know, there are other ways to do it. Shabbos is that, but it's also something else about a special relationship we have with Hashem, etc. So one way or the other, the Sforno captures a little bit of the tension that we are all familiar with about Noach's role, perhaps being hinted at here in Bereishis. Okay, chazak v'nis chazek. Shakoach to our veterans, to our newer students, Beres Hashem. Stay tuned in the bulletin and in the email. We will not forget about you or the shir. I look forward to learning the Noach saga together. But as I said, for a variety of reasons, we're going to take a little bit of a break.